Hello and welcome to The Good Robot Andes, Season 11, Episode 6. Nearly forgot the name of the podcast. My name is Andy Balaam and this is...
Andy Cockerill.
And the thing we're going to talk about tonight is...
It's a TV show called Fleischman is in Trouble.
Called Fleischman is in Trouble. I have to reveal at this point that I have watched and loved Fleischman is in Trouble.
Oh, fantastic.
We didn't... Okay. Listen, we did zero prep. So we didn't...
No, zero prep. I said on the last pod, not the last one, because we did one about Dune 2 on Sunday.
Yeah.
I said I was keeping my powder dry for something.
Yeah. Well, I'm very excited to talk about it. I don't remember a great deal about it, but I remember being very impressed with it. What I will say about it is that the reason I watched it, it's not really my kind of thing. The reason I watched it was because I'm a huge Northern Exposure fan. And it was about a New Yorker called Fleischman, and so I was in, because I thought it might be in some way be related to Northern Exposure.
I love Northern Exposure. I've got the DVD box set and occasionally dip into it. It's so good.
Yeah, it's really good. Anyway.
It's really good.
Enough Northern Exposure talk. Tell us about Fleischman is in Trouble.
Okay, so this is a American drama television miniseries. I'm surprised they still call them that. I thought they were called limited series or event series these days.
Okay.
Created by Taffy Brodesser Ackner, based on her 2019 novel of the same name.
Uh-huh, it's based on a book that explains some things. Okay.
And the series premiered on FX on Hulu in the United States, but on Disney Plus over here.
Yeah, I watched it on Disney Plus.
So in the US, it premiered on November the 17th, 2022. But I think it came here a bit later than that. And the premise is that Toby Fleischman, played by Jesse Eisenberg, is a recently divorced hepatologist in his early 40s using dating apps for the first time.
What's a hepatologist?
I'm going to have a look at that, actually. The study of liver, gallbladder... biliary tree and pancreas.
He's a doctor.
Yeah, it's a very specific thing.
Right, right, right.
As he begins to find romantic success he never achieved in his youth, his ex-wife Rachel, played by Claire Danes, disappears without a trace, leaving him with his two children. Yes?
Listener, there are going to be spoilers in this podcast.
Oh, all over the place. Yeah. His children, Hannah, who is 12, and Solly, who is 9. And while Toby juggles looking after his children, possible promotion at the hospital where he works, and all the possible potential sexual partners in Manhattan, he realizes he will never be able to figure out what happened to his wife until he can be more honest about what happened to their marriage in the first place.
So, yeah, I think it's important to say that there will be spoilers because, I wouldn't want to spoil it for you, listener. If you're going to watch this, pause at this point and watch it because, it goes in surprising directions.
It does.
And maybe you don't mind. If you don't mind spoilers, keep listening. But if you do, pause and listen later.
Exactly, yes. Come back, pause, come back after you've watched it.
And welcome back.
And welcome back. And here you are. So let's talk Fleischman is in Trouble. So the cast is Jesse Eisenberg as Dr. Toby Fleischman. Now, I should say that I think that Jesse Eisenberg is always Jesse Eisenberg in everything.
What else has he been in?
The Social Network?
I haven't seen.
Okay.
I've probably seen it.
He's been in a lot of films, and he's always the same slightly twitchy, fast-talking guy.
Oh, by the way, it's not just a Fleischman who lives in New York. It's a doctor Fleischman who lives in New York.
Yes.
So that's
it.
The Northern Exposure connection thing. Is
classic. Okay. Claire Danes as Rachel Fleischman, Toby's ex-wife. So Claire Danes' debut was in Romeo plus Juliet back in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And then I remember her being in Homeland for many years.
Right.
Which, a series that went up and down in quality, but...
Right, yeah, I watched, the first series and...
I have yet to watch the last series, so... Okay. I'm not really all that invested anymore. Lizzie Kaplan as Libby Epstein, one of Toby's best friends, an old college friend of his. who serves as the narrator of the story, which is a really interesting conceit.
Yes.
Adam Brody as Seth Morris, one of Toby's best friends, also a college friend. then there's a bunch of recurring characters. So let's start. I'm going to go through a brief synopsis of each episode, because they are kind of like chapters of a book, I think, mm-hmm. this show, mm-hmm. in that stuff happens in each one that is sometimes unrelated to the previous chapter, and it does mm-hmm. jump around in time as well.
Right.
And also, events are repeated, but sometimes from somebody else's perspective. But mm-hmm. We'll get into that. We'll get into that. So, in the summer of 2016, all those years ago, this first episode is
before times.
In the before times. The before times. This first episode is called Summon Your Witnesses. And so Toby Fleischman, we already know about him. He's a hepatologist. He's recently got divorced, and he is having lots and lots of casual sex because he's got a dating app.
And he's sort of grieving for his marriage.
Yes. But on advice from his therapist, he reconnects with his old college friends, Libby and Seth, who we've already mm-hmm. talked about, whom he met in a study abroad program in Jerusalem, presumably a kibbutz, which is what, maybe they're not called that anymore, but he has not seen them since the first years of his marriage, which was a while ago. So Rachel drops their children, Hannah, who is the eldest, who resents Toby for the divorce, and Solly, who idolises Toby and seeks his help on his science fair project, off at the apartment a day early, compelling him to leave with their babysitter Mona while he goes on a date and has rampant sex. And the next day, Rachel does not show up to pick the children up.
Yes.
He then, this date then arrives for another hookup, and when she sees the children, she storms out. Now, Libby, who's his college friend, who is happily married, she realizes she is envious of Toby rediscovering himself in the wake of his separation. And this starts to put a strain on her relationship with her husband.
This is interesting, right? Because at this point, I didn't know that Libby was the narrator. Like, I don't think it had been said. And it was...
No, it wasn't said, was it? No, it's not implicit.
You don't know who the narrator is. It's very weird because it's a woman's voice mm-hmm. talking about all the thoughts and feelings going through a man's head.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing of like, hang on, this is the usual thing of I'm getting the man's perspective on this situation, but it's weirdly in a woman's voice. And don't worry, listener, it gets better.
It does. Very much so, yeah. So that first episode is kind of a scene setter into what's maybe going on.
Yeah, and it sets it up as a kind of, isn't it funny how this bloke is trying to navigate dating and what a like wish fulfillment it is for anyone who wishes they were still having loads of casual sex.
Yes.
You know, the series is going to be one thing.
But then it changes.
Yes.
So Toby fires Mona, the babysitter, after he realises that Solly, his son, used his computer to look up pornography. He then takes them to Rachel's house, his ex-wife's house in the Hamptons, when she does not show up to take them. So they use the pool, they use the house, and then the cleaner or the housekeeper turns up and is like, "Who are you?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm the ex-husband." So she calls the police. The police turn up. He isn't arrested or anything. They just politely ask him to leave because he's trespassing. Presumably because it's the Hamptons and, you know, people don't get arrested in the Hamptons. He is ejected from the property. And this then causes him to have an epiphany about moving on in the wake of his divorce. He's still hanging on to it, I guess.
Right.
He's still got the key to the house kind of thing. He finally gets his daughter a cell phone and he sends the children to summer camp, which is something that happens in America because they have such long summer holidays there.
And do we get some time at the summer camp? I seem to remember, I have a sense of anxiety.
No, we don't. Well, they just go.
But they come back early or something, right?
Because, yeah, they come back early.
Because it was the sun was miserable.
He then takes some time off to meet with Libby and Seth in Central Park. And while they're talking about Rachel, his ex-wife, Libby inadvertently plants an idea in his head that the reason for her silence could be that there's something wrong with her or she's in danger. So he then leaves in a panic, only to encounter her friends, i.e. Rachel's friends, who are not nice people. We see them quite a lot during this show. And they're all surface and they're very cliquey. And, this episode where we see them for the first time, they tell him that they saw her napping in the park. And he doesn't really do anything about this. He just thinks, oh, that's weird.
He's just freaked out, right? Like, he thought she was dead, and now it looks like, no, she's kind of swanning around doing nothing, maybe? Or it seems weird.
He's not really sure what's going on, is he? No. So, in the next episode, this is a flashback episode. So after meeting at a college party, Toby and Rachel meet, they fall in love, they get married. Although their respective professional success and contrasting worldviews slowly drive a wedge between them. And I think this is to do with the fact that he's stagnating in his job and she's on the up.
And there's a sense that he's kind of doing the right and good thing and kind of sacrificing for that.
A bit of a martyr, I'd say, in a way.
Yeah.
However, during Rachel's pregnancy with Hannah, a doctor comes into the... So what happens is they're in a hospital room. She's very pregnant. I think she's close. Yeah, the baby's not coming out. And they're talking about doing an induction or something, and she doesn't want to do that. And some of Toby's colleagues come into the room, and Rachel says, no, just get them out. I can't talk to anybody right now. So he goes to usher them out, and as he's leaving, a doctor comes into the room and just, I would say, violates her body by breaking her waters without her permission. So we've got to get things moving, so we're going to break the waters now. And it is such a powerful moment of this is how women are treated in hospital, like basically cattle. Particularly pregnant women are treated by some doctors as a problem rather than actual human beings who need to be treated properly.
Yeah, but we're still getting it from Toby's point of view. So
yes.
It's a disturbing incident, and there's a sense of like, was I, you know, should I have done something kind of thing about it?
Yeah. Yeah. So she has the baby, but Rachel sinks into postpartum depression until Toby hires a nanny. And she is really in a real funk. And he just doesn't want to do it, doesn't know what to do about it. He's never encountered anything like this before because he's a hepatologist.
And it's still very much from his point of view. Like,
yes. Yeah.
There's something wrong with her. He doesn't know how to help.
Yeah. So he doesn't really do anything apart from hiring a nanny. And then Rachel starts her own theatre talent agency. And she becomes increasingly driven by success and wealth, causing her to miss significant time with her family. And this is seen as by Toby as being selfish and self-centered, rather than, you know, her building the business up to make money that they can have a better life kind of thing. and their marriage continues to deteriorate. And Toby really comes to resent Rachel's ambitious lifestyle as well as her wealthy friends, who treat Toby's job with condescension. So we see a scene where there's like a dinner party and we see these awful men, these like alpha male stockbroker type people who look at Toby like over their glasses kind of thing, like, who the hell are you? working in a public hospital, earning peanuts. Even though he's probably not earning peanuts, but compared to them, he is.
Yeah.
And I think he finds them quite intimidating and doesn't like them at all.
Yeah. He finds, like, any engagement with any of her friends is just agony.
Yeah. Absolute agony for him. He just doesn't want to engage with them.
And the falling apart of their relationship is so inevitable and so awful and sad.
Yes, it is. It is. It is. Because they are... They seem to be living parallel lives.
Mm.
That don't interject at all. And the only time when that happens is when they go to one of these dinner parties and he has to engage with her friends and realizes that they're all awful people. And they are awful people, you know. I don't think there's any doubt about that they're not nice people.
So let me just pause you there. So
yes.
Tell me about the atmosphere. Is this a funny program? Is it serious?
I'd say it's life. It's funny in parts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's very serious in other parts. It's very observational
mm-hmm.
about life. It's I'd say it's a drama. It's definitely a drama. It does have moments of levity in it.
And I think it sets you out. It tries to draw you in by being quite light and
yes.
I guess funny.
Yeah.
And then it quickly gets its claws into you.
I think the light relief is frequently from Lizzie Caplan's character. Libby,
right?
Who I think is very funny.
Yeah, I think the relationship between Toby and Libby is also just a relief because a lot of the time things are very tense and sad.
Yes,
and then the two of them can talk in a real honest and a happy, comfortable way.
Yeah, because there's no stakes, is there? Yeah. There's no marriage to save. They're just good friends,
and they really
and they can
understand
be completely honest with each other. Yeah, that's right. So at a dinner with Rachel's friends, when asked to name a person she would like to have sex with outside her marriage, she mentions Sam Rothberg, the alpha male of Rachel's friends group husbands, and the wealthy head of a pharmaceutical company, whom Toby despises for selling placebos to unsuspecting patients.
It's not a good moment.
No.
Like it was supposed to be a celebrity. Yeah.
So we then flash forward to the present, and Toby remembers this incident and looks up Sam on Facebook and realises that Rachel's last known location is a short drive from where Sam was. So that's interesting.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't really... We don't see that rear its head until later on.
So he's kind of furious with her for just dropping the kids, abandoning her family.
Yeah.
And leaving him to be the adult while she presumably is off doing whatever she feels like.
I think the thing with it is that since she failed to come and collect the children, we don't know what's going on with her. And although he met her horrible friends who said, oh, we saw her napping in the park, he doesn't know whether that's true or not.
No, so he still doesn't know whether she's dead or alive.
Yeah.
But he's also really annoyed with her.
Yeah, really annoyed. So in the next episode, we see a bit of Libby's life, actually. And so 2 years prior to all of this, to the present that we were just in, Libby, who is writing for a men's magazine, becomes frustrated that she has not reached the same level of recognition as her male co-workers. And she resolves to write a novel, but never does. And in the present, goes on a vacation to Walt Disney World with her family that increases tensions between her and her husband. Toby has a wild night out with Seth and later buys the Dachshund puppy that his children have always wanted. I thought that was a reckless move. Personally.
So, hold on, what time period are these things happening? So we go right back to the beginning of Rachel's story.
So we got Libby, who is working for a men's magazine.
Oh, sorry, not Rachel's story, Libby's story.
Yeah,
okay.
Libby's story. We then come to the present. They go to Walt Disney World with her husband and their kids, but there's loads of tension between them. And then in the present,
so
again, Toby has
Libby's
a wild
story.
Night out with Seth, who is his other friend. They buy a dog. He goes home with the dog.
So it's a bit confusing why we're suddenly with Libby.
It is, but it does kind of make sense because we need to understand a bit more about what's going on in Libby's life and the tension that is there. Mm-hmm. Since she's been hanging out again with Toby and Seth, her husband's become a bit jealous of all of this and mm-hmm. a bit fed mm-hmm. up with it.
Mm-hmm.
Understandably so, I think. She seems aimless and directionless.
It's
kind of schlubbing around in like tracksuit bottoms and looking a bit rough.
If I remember rightly, Libby's husband is like the nicest person in the world. Is that right?
He seems lovely. Right, yeah. Right.
But maybe not quite that exciting.
Not very exciting, no. And I think she's definitely having more excitement hanging about in New York with Toby.
Right.
Who is kind of behaving like a single man, even though he's got two children.
So just to remind listeners,
and no responsibilities.
Toby is the person who's been the main character up to this point, and Libby yes. is his friend.
His college friend, and so Seth not, is also his college
wife,
friend.
Not the ex-wife, no. Who's Rachel.
No, Rachel is the ex-wife.
We'll yeah. get to her.
Yeah, we will. So he's then called, Toby is called to pick up Hannah from camp after she sent a suggestive photograph to a male camper who shows it to his friends but goes unpunished. So she didn't actually have to come back, but he chose to go and get her anyway.
And he's furious that nothing has been done to the boy.
He's absolutely furious, yeah. And revolted, Toby takes Hannah and Solly with him before telling them about Rachel's choice to abandon them. So he's not doing a terrific job at the moment, Toby.
No, he's struggling.
I think he's definitely struggling.
He's lost his freedom now because they're back.
They're back. Yeah, he actually has to take them to work with him for a little while, which is interesting. He then takes the children to the American Museum of Natural History to see a Vanta Black exhibit that he visited alone earlier. And Vanta Black is a class of super black coatings with total hemispherical reflectances below 1% in the physical spectrum. So the idea behind this is you go into this room that's painted with Vanta Black and it's completely dark. I don't really understand why you would want to do that.
It's like a sensory deprivation thing, right?
Sensory deprivation.
Sometimes you have hallucinations yeah. and things if you go somewhere like that.
Yeah, yeah. So they go into this thing that's completely black, which is quite interesting. That's the end of that episode. And then Toby breaks things off with a woman he's been seeing for a while because she's married and doesn't want to get divorced, and decides to take a more normal approach to relationships. He gets passed over for a promotion at work due to how many personal days he's been taking.
Yeah, because he's been having to look after the kids and stuff. And like, yes.
It really feels like he's
struggling.
Unraveling.
Yeah.
There's this question
of like, what's going to happen with Libby? Like, is he going to get together with Libby? Is that going to be the thing that
happens? I really was hoping that he wouldn't do that because Libby mm-hmm. seems to have a very stable home life.
And a very nice husband, if she could just
appreciate
him.
A very nice husband who is very supportive of her, but is getting a bit fed up with her.
Yeah.
And I was really hoping in this series that didn't happen, that she didn't torpedo her nice home life to go and be with Toby, who is a bit of a mess.
Yeah, I definitely to watch another marriage fall apart. Definitely not.
I get the feeling that Libby is someone who likes to fix people.
Right.
And she's directionless in terms of like having not written a novel. In terms of her work, she's all over the place. But Toby is kind of giving her a project to work on at the moment.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
a bit of focus. So he gets passed over a promotion. He compulsively asks out one of his students he has been mentoring when she tries to reassure him, which she awkwardly turns down. You know, he kind of mistakes her just being supportive for her being interested in him because his radar is just messed up.
And this is just another, like, it's another example of how he's kind of losing it. Like, he can't see that that's completely inappropriate relationship to even attempt to.
He's making bad decisions. He's making a lot of bad decisions. In frustration, he chastises Karen's husband. Now, Karen is one of his patients. With Karen having been readmitted due to a post-surgery fatal development. And Toby attends an annual meetup for his college trip to Israel that he has not been to since he married Rachel and enjoys himself. Though, after observing an argument between Libby and Libby and Adam are a couple, that reminds him of how Rachel once spoke to him, he gets in an argument with Libby and Seth, his other friend. And Libby stops by. Yeah.
This is an example of it being quite episodic. You know, so there's just this other story that happens, and it all goes to develop the characters, but it's kind of. So it's another little story that happens.
Yeah, that's right.
They go away and.
Yeah. So Libby stops by Toby's apartment on the way back to her house to use the bathroom and ends up lamenting about how much she misses her past before Toby realizes she's fallen asleep. And she ends up sleeping in his bed next to him and delays going home by wandering through the city, where she ends up sitting across from Rachel in the park. And that's how that episode ends.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of tentatively sits down opposite Rachel and just stares at her like, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. kind of thing. What's going on? So that's how that episode ends. We're now on the penultimate episode, which I think is the one where we start to understand what's been going on.
Wow, so it says we're nearly finished. I thought the kind of realization of what was going on was earlier and there was more of it.
No. So we got this penultimate episode. So Libby takes Rachel back to Rachel's apartment after Rachel appears to be delirious and speaking in riddles. And on Libby's advice, Rachel talks about her situation. So Rachel lost her mother at a young age, and she was sent by her grandmother to a Catholic boarding school, where she immediately craved the luxury afforded by her peers. She became attracted to Toby because he did not care about her lack of wealth, as well as hoping to be part of his family. We then see the event in the hospital from her perspective that I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more traumatic than it was from Toby's perspective.
It's so cleverly done. The same stuff happens, and we see it, and we actually fully understand what it was like.
Why she was so traumatized by it, yeah. Because this doctor just walks into the room, puts a pair of gloves on, and just does something to her without her consent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Toby walks into the room and says, what the hell's going on here? And the doctor backs away and holds his hands up like, I've just done something wrong, kind of thing. It's traumatic, and it made me angry. It made my wife very emotional watching it.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's really horrible, but it's very... What it's showing is something that doesn't get talked about enough in terms of how women are treated, particularly pregnant women are treated in hospital, and how women are treated in general by doctors, which is in not the same way as men are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We see that event. She then, after that, in her postpartum depression, she begins seeing support groups. But left after an encounter with the same doctor in an elevator who doesn't remember her.
So then we start to realise that her depression that we'd seen before is quite centred on that incident.
And
potentially caused by it. And it's but a Toby huge just doesn't thing in her, realize her life. It. Yeah, he doesn't realise.
She leaves after an encounter with the same doctor in an elevator, and decides to pick her life back up, leading her to the agency. Unbeknownst to Toby, she secretly knew her friends were vain, stay-at-home mothers and only latched onto them for fear of abandonment. And this is a thing that gets talked about in this episode, is that, or maybe it's the next episode, is that the voiceover says, the thing with Rachel is she was dumped. She was dumped by everyone.
Mm.
So her mother died. Her grandmother packed her off to a boarding school. She then meets Toby and they fall in love and they're very happy for quite a long time.
Mm.
But then we see the breakup of their marriage through her eyes, which is Toby saying to her, this just isn't working anymore. You know, that's basically it. It's
you
over.
See some of the same incidents again from through her eyes.
Yeah.
And it's so well done that they're the same thing is happening, but it feels so different. And yeah, it's
we also see
it's like she feels like she's losing his respect, and he's kind of morally superior to her, and he'll never.
Yeah,
it's inevitable. So it's just like it felt inevitable to him.
Yeah,
it feels inevitable to her, and it's tearing her apart.
Everybody dumps her. Everybody leaves her. Mm. Her stay-at-home mum friends, they dump her. And then we see her. She does indeed have an affair with that alpha male pharmaceutical guy, and he dumps her as well because she's losing her mind. And I think his line is something like, they go to this fancy spa hotel place.
Oh, yeah.
And the line to her is, he just starts packing his stuff up. She's like, what are you doing? He says, oh, I saw you because you were fun. You're not fun anymore. Yeah. So I'm going.
It's awful.
It's brutal.
Yeah, it's I can't believe all this brutal. Happens in just one or two episodes.
Yeah, it really does. It's just so powerfully done.
The turnaround for me, I feel like this whole series is like an exercise in empathy, right? And then you learn what it's like to be someone else. You start off thinking you're Fleischman, and then you learn what it's like to be Rachel, and it's so huge.
I think you understand that the title Fleischman is in Trouble applies to both of them.
Yeah.
Not just him. We've gone through the affair, and she gets rid of her phone. She gets
the affairs are after the divorce, right?
Yes. Right. She dumps her phone at the resort, and that's why Toby can't get a hold of her.
Right.
She buries it somewhere.
As part of some kind of healing process or something.
Yes, I think so, yeah. So she experiences withdrawal from the lack of the procedures. Just looking to see what that means. She took an experimental marijuana pill that Sam gave her. Oh, yeah, that's right. But the drug turned out to be hallucinogen, presumably a type of LSD, or maybe mushrooms. And she ends up staying in her apartment for weeks on end under the influence. She eventually gets sober, gets a new phone, and goes to see her oldest and most important client, but discover that she has been dropped after weeks of no communication.
So now
and she wanders the city until...
fell apart, and then her career fell apart as well.
Yeah, so she wanders around the city until she meets Libby in the park. And then, in a moment at the end of this episode is... Libby puts Rachel to bed, and Rachel is like, no, I can't go to bed. I've got to do this. And Libby's just like, just go to sleep. And she goes to sleep. And it's like this moment that you've been waiting for Rachel to finally just relax and sleep has happened.
And
that's how the episode ends.
I can't emphasize enough how much we thought Rachel was a selfish, bad person.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't get help when she was depressed and was just all about herself in every way, and also said some awful things during the falling
she
apart of
their marriage.
She did
say some bad, awful things to him, yeah.
And then in the space of this one episode, it turns out, I thought it was more, we suddenly understand that that's not the picture at all, not the full picture, whatever you want to say it. She's had this extremely traumatic event that has really sent her spinning. And also the way Toby was behaving was at least as much, you know, part of the breakdown of the relationship. And
yeah,
and now the reason she's disappeared is because she's basically had a serious mental health episode.
And taken some drugs as well.
And some kind of drug thing happened.
Hallucinogenic drugs.
So suddenly she's not the bad person anymore.
So during that episode, we see her repeatedly call the same Chinese restaurant to order like spaghetti noodles. And every time they arrive, she takes a bite of them and then throws them away.
Yeah.
And she does this. She doesn't remember. She repeatedly does it over and over again. And it reminded me of a movie that comes up a lot in our chats about Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
In which Ellen Burstyn's character does a similar kind of behavior. She just repeats stuff over and over again, even though it's not the right thing to do. I think she's actually taking like barbiturates or something Requiem for a Dream. So we are back to the final episode. So Libby then goes to Toby's apartment to update him on Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
But he dismisses Rachel's nervous breakdown and asks Libby to leave. He's really defensive and quite aggressive towards her. And essentially his line is, she's my ex-wife. It's not my problem.
Yeah, yeah. And in his mind, she's still the bad person that we were seeing before.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And after taking Karen, who's his patient, off life support at husband's request, he slowly realizes that he may have had blame in others' lives and resolves to make amends. And that's a powerful moment, actually, when that happens. Mm. So he becomes content with not getting him promotion. He helps Solly, his son, finish his school project and begins finalizing the details of Hannah's bar mitzvah. But she reveals that she doesn't want to go through with it. And Toby, who understands the importance of her having her own views on stuff, says, yeah, okay, fine. We'll have a private coming of age ceremony. We don't need to have the bar mitzvah. We can do what you want to do.
Does he talk to his rabbi? I feel like there's a rabbi there at some point.
Yeah, the rabbi is, you know, is cool. Okay, fine.
Very cool.
He's cool with it, yeah. So as Toby is rebuilding his life, Libby's life starts to fall apart.
Mm.
And when she finally returns to her family, she finds them really angry. She continues to fight with Adam, who retaliates to Libby's apparent social life by developing one of his own. And despite her frequent attempts to apologize, he's just not really interested. I think he's close to having enough, really.
Yeah.
But Libby then attends a party Seth invites her and Toby to, and they realize that it's a party that Seth is going to propose to his girlfriend, Vanessa. Toby and Libby make up with him and each other before discussing her idea and a book, which is going to be based on Toby's divorce. Which I guess is the book that we are watching.
Yes, yeah, don't they argue about whether marriage is a good thing and tell him that marriage is terrible?
Yeah, even though he's getting married.
Yeah. It's really insensitive of them.
Yeah, very. Oh, utterly. Very self-centered and...
Yeah.
And yeah, very insensitive, yeah. But the conversation transitions into her thoughts on how her life changed after she got married. But Toby does listen to this, and he consoles her by saying that even if life may not seem like it's worth it, she is worth, you know, she is a worthy person. So she then is kind of at peace with this now. You know, Seth is getting married. Toby seems to be getting his life together. There doesn't really seem to be any reason for her to be going to New York anymore. So she goes home and kind of makes peace with her husband, where they reconcile. Yeah. But they also have, at this party, her and Libby have a conversation, or Libby has a monologue about how she thinks things are going to pan out with Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't speak Rachel's name during this monologue, she's talking about a person. So Toby goes home.
Isn't there like a double meaning to it of like she might be talking about herself? Or I feel like there was something like that to it.
Yeah, it's not very clear, but I kind of understood. I think I understood that she meant it was Rachel. So Toby returns to his apartment alone, and then somebody puts a key in the door and turns it, and Rachel's there. Then it ends.
Where are the kids?
In bed.
Right.
Yeah, they're asleep. And I think that ending is perfect. It's like we've gone from the first episode where we see her briefly. Do we see her at all in the first episode? I'm not sure we do, actually.
I know
we see her in flashback. I mean, I don't think we actually see her at all. So, but she's come back.
She drops off the kids, right? So.
Oh, does she? Okay.
I think so. And then disappears.
Yeah. So she drops the kids off, but then we don't see them together until the final episode when she turns up at the apartment.
Right.
And this is, to me, that's like she's got her head straight enough that she can go and talk to him about everything that's happened.
And I feel like there's some kind of chance of some...
I don't think they're going to reconcile, but I think they're going to have some closure.
Like, yeah, I don't think they're going to like fall in love with each other again. Although I would secretly want them to, but
yeah, I would too. Yeah,
but yeah, like they might just start seeing each other as humans, and Toby might help her when she's really struggling.
Yeah. So this was a bit of a treat. I heard about this on the Pilot TV podcast, which is a podcast I listen to, which is all about television. What's coming up, and they talked about this on that, and I thought that sounds interesting. That's got a good cast. And then started watching it and was just absolutely hooked on it immediately. It's just so well made.
I nearly stopped watching it after the first episode because it just seemed to me like it was going to be, like I said, this kind of wish fulfillment thing of this bloke is getting to live the single life again, blah blah blah. But there was something about it. It was, as you say, it was just well made. The script was really tight.
Really sharp, yeah.
And that was just enough to keep me going. And then when it finally hit its twist, I felt like it was a life-changing thing
for
me.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
I learned about myself and other people from it.
Yeah, and what it took me back to was... This is an often said thing that people say, but in Harper Lee's book, To Kill a Mockingbird, when Scout, who is the person whom we see the stories through her eyes, she's asking her dad about... her dad uses the analogy that you need to walk around in someone's shoes to understand what their life is like, and she doesn't understand that analogy.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to explain it to her. And to me, that's what the latter part of this series felt like.
Yes.
Is that you get to see an event in a it's not a Rashomon-style narrative. You get to see an event from two people's perspective, but in both perspectives, it's totally different. But this life-changing event that happens in the hospital, from his perspective, it's one thing. From her perspective, it's... something that traumatizes her completely.
The whole series is like a sucker punch, right? So it spends a lot of its running time, you just getting more and more relaxed with, you know, like you're on Toby's side. You know he's flawed, but you're like, you really want him to like find a nice relationship or something, you know, or at least look after his kids well and not mess that up or whatever. You want things to go well for him. And Rachel is just selfish and confusing, and like there's nothing he could do.
Uncommunicative.
Yeah. And then just when you've completely dropped your guard, it comes in right to the solar plexus and says, you've seen all these events before. Now
Episode
I'm going to show
seven.
Them to you again. Yeah. And you're going to realize what you were missing.
So there's a little scene in that episode, which is one of the ones about Rachel being dumped by people. is that the first time she meets his parents at this dinner party, which is excruciating. They ask her where she grew up and who her parents were, and she tells them what happened to her mum and what happened to her. There's this pause and silence, and then Toby's mum says, "Who would like more eggnog?" or something like that. It's like, we don't want to talk about this. This is far too traumatic. Let's talk about something else. And Rachel just seems completely taken aback by this approach, is that these people are not being honest and they don't really care that much about her life.
And she has this desire to be accepted and included in this family. And
yes,
she's never going to match up because she's too shallow, she's too money focused and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And her early life was too traumatic for them to be bothered to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like a moment of non-acceptance.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought that moment was very powerful. Very, very powerful. I mean, the whole thing is, as you say, it's a show that starts off being one thing and then flips. Very quickly flips to being something else.
I think it's so interesting to me that I thought it was about half and half of his perspective and her perspective.
Right.
And that shows just what a massive impact that single episode had on me. Yeah.
It's huge, that episode. And the thing is, it's no longer than any of the other episodes, but it really packs a lot of content into its running time. I love this series. I would gladly watch this again. Because I enjoyed it so much, even though there are moments in it that are traumatic and upsetting.
You're making me want to watch it again right now, actually.
Yeah, cool. Performances are fantastic. I would say that my thing about Jesse Eisenberg always being Jesse Eisenberg is true. But I think that, you know, if you're in casting and you say, okay, we want this twitchy, slightly socially awkward person, professional, who do we go for? Let's go for Jesse Eisenberg. That's who you go for. And if you've seen Homeland and you've seen the bits in Homeland where Claire Danes is off her meds, that's the performance you want in episode 7. is that character from Homeland off her meds? And Claire Danes does that like brilliantly.
Oh, it's good. It's really good. Yeah.
It's so, so good. It's really powerful stuff.
I think the Libby stuff and the narrator being a character who's involved but also able to distance herself.
Yes.
It's just an extra bonus. Like, I don't think it needed that. And I guess maybe, like, the reason why it has it is because the book has it and, some, you know, book maybe needs a bit more. But it just adds an extra layer of depth don't get me wrong, I absolutely love it, but I felt like you didn't even need that extra layer of depth. You already had plenty to go with.
I really enjoy that narration, though.
Yeah.
And when you realise in that final episode that, oh, I'm going to write a novel about your divorce, it's like, okay, well, this is what we're listening to now then.
Yeah.
This is what we were listening to from the very beginning of this story is the novel, as she describes everything.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I thought the bit at the end where she was talking about the character in the novel, that it was deliberately about both her and Rachel, I think.
Right, like, right. Yeah. Because I think that Libby maybe regrets some stuff and maybe looks at Toby and thinks, yeah, I could have gotten married to you if I'd known you at that time, kind of thing. But it didn't happen. And she's definitely holding a torch for him, I think.
Well, there's definitely some potential there. I wouldn't call it necessarily a torch. But what I really like about it is that what ends up happening is they end up being really good friends to each other. They really help each other in their times of need. And Libby is also really compassionate towards Rachel, despite having heard the same perspective that we heard from Toby.
Yes, but then she hears what Rachel has to say.
Exactly. And then she's compassionate towards Rachel before that happens.
Yeah. And I think
so we like Libby.
I do like Libby. I think I think Lizzie Caplan does a terrific job of playing that role.
Right.
Because she manages to play it light, but also when it needs to be serious, she's deadly serious about stuff. And I think the scene in the final episode where she goes to Toby's apartment and tells her what's going on is really well played.
Mm-hmm.
Really well played.
I think it's a courageous series in a number of ways.
Yeah, yeah.
I especially think it's courageous to have a model of like a positive marriage between Libby and her husband.
Yeah.
That isn't perfect and has problems, but it doesn't... But, you know, like, her husband is actually trying his best kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very courageous in a number of ways.
Yeah. So, we recommend Fleischman is in Trouble, I think.
We do.
Yeah. It's good. And I'm glad you've seen it, actually. It's been good to talk about it with somebody else who's seen it.
Yeah.
Because I don't know anybody else who's seen this show, apart from me and Danny.
There's no way. There's no way I would have watched it if it weren't for the random Northern Exposure connection.
So where did you, did you just see it on Disney Plus and thought, oh, that looks potentially interesting? Or did you hear about it somewhere?
I think something like I never read newspapers, but like I was at someone's house and there was a thing in a newspaper that mentioned it or something like that. You know, like it was some kind of interest piqued in me from someone mentioning it. And that Northern Exposure connection pinged in my mind. In fact, I watched the first episode thinking that it might be a deliberate continuation of the Fleischman character from Northern Exposure. That was like why I watched it.
But it wasn't. But you watched it anyway.
But it was surprisingly good and then got really, honestly, slightly life-changingly good by the end.
Yeah, I think it was life-changingly good. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
I recommend another FX Disney Plus show called Dave.
Okay.
Which is about a Jewish rapper called Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Or Dave. There's several series of that. They're like 25-minute episodes. They're quite short.
Mm-hmm.
Which is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It's about his attempts to become famous and this entourage of people that he surrounds himself with. It's so, so good. I think you'd love it.
On what can it be watched?
It's on Disney Plus.
Also on Disney Plus. Dave. Yeah. Okay.
Dave. Yeah. Very funny. Very good observational comedy.
Right.
For the most part, comedy. Some of it's a bit dramatic, but there's an episode where he goes to Rick Rubin's house because he's been told that Rick Rubin wants to record him. And that is one of the most surreal things I've ever seen. It's so strange.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. It's good.
What else have you been watching?
Dune 2 with you.
Just been thinking about Dune 2, basically.
I've just been thinking about that a lot, yeah. Started watching the Oscars.
Right.
Jimmy Kimmel's a great host. It goes on a long time, though. So
okay.
It was live on ITV, so we recorded it.
Okay.
And we started watching last night, and we got as far as Best Supporting Actor. So Robert Downey Jr. won for Oppenheimer, which is
right.
A solid win, I think.
Right.
Haven't got to any of the other big stuff so far, but...
Have you been avoiding spoilers?
Yeah. I mean, I do know what's won,
right.
But I just keep forgetting, so...
Good.
But yeah, it's just nice to see it. I haven't seen it for years, basically.
Right.
It's just nice to see it. Billie Eilish did just an incredible performance of her song from Barbie, which was...
Right.
Because she's just an incredible talent, so that was fantastic.
Right. Yeah, I don't really have any interest in watching the Oscars. It's interesting.
No, I know. No. But yeah, enjoyed that. Not really up to date with stuff, actually. Trying to think what the last movie I watched was, and I can't think.
We've recently finished watching Shetland.
Oh, yeah.
In the last series, the main character is gone, and his deputy is the new... she keeps calling herself Temporary DI.
Right. But she is actually in charge.
She is the temporary DI, but there's no need to say that every time you introduce yourself. But, you know, kind of that.
I'm the temporary DI.
That's what's happening with the character, right? That she's like, doesn't have the confidence kind of thing. But yeah, that was surprisingly fine given that he wasn't there anymore. She's really good, the person who plays his deputy. And interestingly, they found a storyline way of getting an older person into the plot, a detective from London who was born on Shetland. So it's the two of them sparking off each other. But interestingly, she's okay. Not quite as this new senior older person is not quite as level-headed as the main character from before. So
a bit of a hothead.
Yeah, things. I mean, it's a weird time for her anyway. But yeah, things go a bit off. So it was a surprisingly good series, and that was only quite recent that they made that. So it's possible they'll make more of those.
I just remembered we've been watching somewhat bingily a BBC show called Rain Dogs.
Okay, I think I've heard of it. But don't know anything about it.
Daisy May Cooper, who wrote it and stars in it. It's about a single mother who is like a very low ebb, and her best friend is a gay, somewhat psychotic gay man who is like a cross between Hugh Grant in Four Weddings and a Funeral and Richard E. Grant's character Withnail from Withnail and I.
Okay.
But if you could imagine them, if you can imagine Withnail just going completely off the rails and becoming a bit of a nutter, it's that kind of thing. It's really good. I highly recommend it. It's on the iPlayer.
Rain Dogs.
That's called Rain Dogs. Yeah, that's their 30-minute episode, so you don't have to give up too much time for it.
We've also been watching more Vera.
Oh, yeah.
Which we still like. They're single story per episode, Vera, and they're about an hour and a half long.
Oh, so what, an anthology or each one is self-contained?
Each one is self-contained, which is quite nice, because Shetland used to be like that and then wasn't anymore. And there's something quite nice.
It became episodic.
The more I watch Vera, the more I think it's basically Miss Marple for modern times.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I like a nice procedural.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
I mean, I think House with Hugh Laurie is basically a procedural, isn't it?
I mentioned House today because we were talking about bugs in our software and how when people report them, they often tell you things that aren't actually right. And I said,
because everybody lies.
House says everybody lies. Yeah.
Everybody lies, yeah. Yeah, nobody wants to tell you the truth because the truth is not pleasant. Yeah.
Yeah, I love House. It's so comforting to me.
It's great. It's just so well made.
It goes together in my head with Elementary.
Which is the Johnny Lee Miller Sherlock Holmes show. Is that in New York?
Is that right? It's great. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
I think that's quite good.
I find both of them very comforting because if you watch an episode, you basically know what you're getting. You're going to get pretty much the same thing every time.
Because it's always going to be the same thing. They're very undemanding.
I really like it. I love House. I'd really like to watch that again.
House is just great for Hugh Laurie's performance, which is
he's just
amazing.
Excellent. Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah. He's just so entertaining constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, House has some serious ups and downs. It has some serious downs.
I haven't seen enough of it to really make a comment on that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, early series is go for it. Later series is you're going to need to be a fan too.
Right. So it's kind of soft peddling.
I don't know if it gets better again. There was a particularly low point. There's a bit where he decides he's going to have a competition like The Apprentice for who's going to be his next team of young doctors.
Okay.
And he gets 50 of them to all sign up.
50?
Yeah.
That seems excessive.
And then eliminates them. And it's just stupid.
That does sound stupid. Yeah.
But yeah. The thing is, it's still a pleasure to watch. But yeah,
I can't really think at the moment of anything else apart from Rain Dogs that we've been watching. Apart from like Pottery Throwdown, The Apprentice.
Oh, we watched another stuff. Sort Your Life Out. Oh, I love Sort Your Life Out.
Oh, with
Stacey Solomon.
Yes. Yeah.
She's the nicest person in the world. And it's her and her team being really nice to families who have had really hard time for various different reasons.
Which is a lot at the moment.
Yeah. And it's just life affirming.
Yeah. Nice. Anything to plug?
That's a good question. Yes. Yeah, I have got some things to plug.
Oh, there you go.
I'm currently making a video series teaching you how to program in Rust. It's called Rust 101. Rust is it's very exciting programming language that I really like. So I am releasing those episodes on Diode Zone, which is a cool modern video sharing platform that federates with Mastodon. You should listen to our Mastodon episode. Mm-hmm. Or if you're slow on the uptake with the cool modern stuff, it's also coming out on YouTube, but much later. So if you want to get the new episodes, get them on Diode Zone. Otherwise,
okay. You
can watch out for them on YouTube. I've just started the YouTube release, and people seem quite interested in it. It's doing quite well, so I'm excited about it.
Excellent. That's good. That's very good.
Rust 101.
Nice.
And it's based on some slides that I did not write. Normally, I design my own slides for the presentations that I do, but I realized I didn't have time to do that. So I found some people on the internet who have made some open source...
The internet?
On the internet. Made some slides that are designed for a university course on Rust, but they're open source, so I'm allowed to use them. So I'm using them for my videos with appropriate credit.
Oh, very good.
And that's great, not having to do all that work yourself. Sometimes it's not exactly what I would have done and stuff like that, and I found a few bugs and reported the bugs against it. But I wouldn't have been able to do this series. I wouldn't have had time without these slides. So it's awesome that resource is available.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, that's very useful.
So yeah, if you're interested in learning Rust, by the way, if you can't program anything else, I wouldn't recommend starting with Rust. I'd recommend starting with Python or something like that. I have other videos that...
Yeah.
I have a huge series of videos that teaches you how to program your first ever game in Python. So you should search for that instead.
Right.
But yeah, if you're interested in Rust and you've done some other programming, check it out.
Nice. I have nothing to plug.
Nothing to plug. What did I get you to say in an Arnie voice when we were on the train?
Oh, so many things. So yeah, many things.
Could have been anything.
I can't remember what it was.
All right. Well, then that's it.
That's it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, listener, for putting up with us. Oh, gosh, we've been going a long time.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
And see you next time.
Yeah, bye.